Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Thanks to Vodafone Business. With cybersecurity solutions from Vodafone, your business can hack off the hackers. See vodafone.ie/business.
This is News Talk.
Yeah, you're very welcome to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Coming up over the next hour, we'll hear from the head of Ford about their new initiatives to get more drivers into EVs. Plus, as ever, I'll answer your tech questions. If you want to get in touch, you can do so right now. Drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com, or you'll find me on Instagram at JessKellyNT. It's finally here, the June bank holiday weekend. There's a lot going on in Dublin city centre over the next few days. Bloom is taking place in Dublin's Phoenix Park. I'm heading along and very excited about it. And then on Sunday, I am running the VHI Women's Mini Marathon in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. I mentioned on the show last week that we were just shy of our target of $2,000. And by the end of this show, last Saturday, we reached our target. So a huge thank you to every single person who donated. You can still donate if you so wish. You can head to idonate.ie/runfordrcc. All of the money is going to Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. And I will be doing all 10 kilometres with my little sausage dog legs around Dublin. And I'm very excited. A bit nervous, but very excited. This will be my second year doing it. So if you're taking part, drop me a message on Instagram at JessKellyNT. A few of us are going to meet here at News Talk Towers before we head over to the start line, and then we're going to get it done. Fingers crossed the weather holds up. Every time I look at the weather forecast, it's saying something different. So ideally, it won't be as hot as last year, but it also won't be an absolute washout. So somewhere in the middle would be fantastic. But if you're taking part in the mini marathon, best of luck to you. It is a fantastic day out. If you're not running, line the streets and show your support. It is just an incredible buzz. But I'd love to hear from you. What are you up to this bank holiday weekend? Again, the email is techtalk@newstalk.com. But we're going to start the show this week with one of the most iconic car brands in the world, because this week they announced a new initiative to encourage more drivers towards EVs. The Ford Power Promise includes free home chargers with a €10 installation fee, as well as supports, warranties and other bits and pieces. Lisa Brankin is the Ford UK Chair and Managing Director of Ford of Britain and Ireland. I'm delighted to say she joins me now. Lisa, it's great to chat with you. When I was reading up on your career to date, what jumped out at me was that not only have you been in this industry for quite a while, but you've also been at Ford from a very young age. Can you take us back to the start and tell us a little bit about how and when you joined?
So I joined Ford as part of their graduate training program, and it wasn't really a deliberate plan. It just kind of happened a little bit by accident, in that I'd filled in lots of applications and had lots of interviews and got some job offers, and Ford was the one that I picked. And I joined as a graduate trainee many, many years ago, and I've kind of spent my career with Ford, and I've been really fortunate in that they've allowed me to do lots of different interesting stuff. So I've never really felt the need to leave.
Yeah, it's funny. I'm kind of the same, and I think we're a bit of a dying breed. I've been at News Talk for 17 years, and I guess not many people stick with one company for such a long period of time. But I'm sure having started that at that graduate level to the role you have today, you've seen some incredible transformations within the industry. When you look back over that period, can you pinpoint specific landmark moments along the way?
So I suppose it's hard, as you're going through things at the time, it's hard to recognise that. I think, we've seen a move away from traditional passenger vehicles as they were, things like Fiesta and Focus and Sierras and Mondeos, into vehicles that have got SUV styling, and they're more, we don't have traditional cars anymore. The styling and segmentation have changed very much. I think also I've seen over my time an increase in the amount of technology available as standard across the range that customers have begun to expect as normal. When I think back to driving, it wasn't unusual to not have electric windows and not have central locking. And now, if you think about the amount of technology and electronics in a vehicle, even commercial vehicles, the world has moved on in leaps and bounds. And I think sometimes change happens in small increments and you don't notice it at the time. It's only when you look back and do a comparison that it hits you. We had a team meeting when we announced that we were no longer going to produce Fiesta, and someone was kind of reminiscing and they're talking about their Fiesta that had a choke. And over half the people in the room are younger members, the team members had never heard of a choke and didn't know what it was. So you realize that the world changes you really, really quickly.
Yeah, and obviously Ford is an iconic brand. It's, well established, long established in the industry. And as you've seen more players enter the market, particularly in recent years, how has the company ensured that it remains not only part of the conversation, but leading certain aspects of that conversation and fulfilling the needs and the wants of the consumer?
So I think there's two bits of our business, Jess, particularly. There's the commercial vehicle bit of the business, so cars and vans, and the other bit is our passenger vehicle business. So in terms of cars and vans, we've always been really focused on that bit of the business. And what we do there is very much focus on what our end customer needs to make their business successful. So we've evolved and developed the range of commercial vehicles that we offer, the derivatives that we offer, and now we're focusing very much on the services that we offer to help those businesses be efficient and keep their vehicles on the road. So that's a constant evolution. On cars, we've had to think about the segments that we can compete in and that we can win in, and that means that we maybe can't be everything to everybody as we once were. We thought a little bit more about where the market's going, and particularly more recently about our move into electrification. So as we think about where we are today, we've just launched our full range of electric vehicles that we'll have in the market for a while. We've got our smallest vehicle is a Puma, then we have an Explorer, then we have a Capri, and then we have a larger Mustang Mach-E. So we've thought about what the direction of travel is in the industry and how we compete effectively in those areas that we can be profitable and be successful in.
We have a regular segment on this program with Derek Riley of Nevo.ie, and we talk about EVs and the trends and what's coming down the line. And one thing that we know, because Derek says it often, is that an EV is not for everyone. You need to assess your driving style. You need to assess the journeys that you do, your lifestyle, your family. Do you find customers are coming to the forecourt fully informed, or are they curious, and are there certain pieces of information that are shared that helps get it over the line?
So I think that's a hard question to answer, Jess, because I don't think everybody's the same. I think there's a lot of consumers who probably have not considered an EV. They think that it's not for them, when maybe it could be for them. And yes, there are some people have researched and rejected, or researched and ruled it in. But I think we've done a little bit of thinking over why people might not want an EV, and some of those things are rational facts, and some of them are just perceptions. So we've just launched a thing called a Power Promise, and they become a test drive now, so they understand a little bit more about electrified product. So the next time they switch, they might be ready to do it.
Yeah, talk me through a little bit more about what that entails and how you're going to go about, communicating that to the consumer.
So what we thought about was the reasons why people might be concerned about buying an electric. So what we're offering is a free home charger with standard installation, with a very small charge. We're offering a free of charge 5-year service plan, so that'll kind of reassure around maintenance costs. We're confirming our 8-year, 160,000 kilometer high voltage battery warranty. And with that 5-year servicing plan comes towing assistance. So that means you won't ever be stranded if you, for ever any reason, run out of charge. And we're also giving you access to our charging network, Blue Oval charging network, through the FordPass app that helps you with billing in one point. So we thought about the things that people are concerned about and tried to reassure with our Power Promise. Now, We know that for most customers, home charging is the best solution. And not everybody can have a home charger, but where you can, that's why we're offering a free of charge home charging solution. Because most people do relatively short journeys. Either journey times are generally less than, or journey mileage is less than 20 kilometers at a daily commute. So actually, charging overnight at home and having a home charging solution can be a really, really practical solution for a lot of people thinking about making the switch to electrification.
Yeah, and in terms of just delving a bit deeper, in terms of explaining it to your customers and to the population, is this going to be a key part of your messaging now to try and get people not only into an EV, but into a Ford in particular?
Yes, I'm definitely hoping so. It'll be part of all of our communications, and it's what our dealerships in Ireland will be talking to customers about. So I'm definitely hoping, as I said, that it will give people a reason to come and consider Ford electric vehicles. And even if they're not going to buy today, it's about encouraging people to come and test drive just so they are fully informed about electrification rather than just maybe listen to the person they talk to in the pub.
I've been at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show in Las Vegas, in years gone by, and I've seen Ford on display showcasing the in-car technology. How important are those in-car technology features? Is it almost a given that it's going to be there now, or is that a sway factor for consumers?
I think so. I mean, I think one of the things that, so I think probably Jess, you might agree that customers are looking for things that make their life easier, and they're looking for integration. So things like Apple CarPlay or Android CarPlay is really important feature when people are buying vehicles. The other thing that we're seeing, which is maybe less to do about consumers, but more to do with legislation, the increase of driver assistance technology in vehicles over the past number of years is really substantial, and that's about making the driver experience safer for customers, and that's true of cars, and it's also true of commercial vehicles. So I think technology, I'm not sure technology in and of itself is a reason for customers to buy a car, but certainly what they're looking for is technology that's easy, that's accessible, and it makes the driving and owning experience easier for them.
And how important is it to have something that caters to the broad spectrum of not only consumers, but also commercial vehicles? We know that there's, a smaller vehicle for someone's first car. There's family vehicles for people who want to, pack in the 2.4 children and the dog. And then you also have a suite of commercial offerings. How important is it to have such a comprehensive portfolio?
So I think what we've done on our passenger vehicle lineup, as I said before, is think about the segments where we can be profitable and we can win, and we've focused on developing and bringing to market really competitive products in those segments. And the technology and features that you offer in a car, to some degree, might be different to what you offer in a commercial vehicle. Our commercial vehicle lineup is probably one of the most comprehensive in the industry in terms of the vehicle lineup itself, but also then the conversions and adaptations that you can make to those commercial vehicles and the kind of technology that we're seeing customers want in commercial vehicles is probably a little bit different. So they want the convenience of navigation and really good integration and sound systems and radio systems, etc. But they also want the tools to help make sure their vehicles stay on the road. So, and we call that uptime. So they're looking at we're looking at how we access technical information from the vehicle that allows fleets and businesses to be more proactive in the way that they maintain vehicles to avoid any kind of downtime. Although, as I say that, there is a remarkable degree of overlap between the sort of features that people want on their commercial vehicles versus what they've got in their cars, because they've got used to driving with driver assistance technology on their car, and they definitely want it in their workplace as well.
Yeah, and we've heard that as well from those who drive commercial vehicles that they do want a nice space to spend the time in. And we've spoken quite a bit about moving fleets from diesel to electric. How realistic is that notion? And talk me through, I suppose, the considerations that businesses need to assess versus what a family car needs to take into consideration.
So I think it's kind of a different consideration. There's a number of different levels. So for commercial vehicles, most people have drive and own a commercial vehicle for a purpose, and that's usually because they've got to transport goods or tools, or it's a, some kind of functional need. So they've got to make sure that the vehicle they buy meets that need. Now, there are some cases where, because of the load you carry or the distance that you need to travel in a day, that an EV might not be suitable for you. But in many other cases, Jess, it is really suitable. And in those instances, what you've got to think about is the practical considerations of how you charge that vehicle. Now, again, if vehicles are coming back into a depot, you can have a depot home charging solution or a depot charging solution that works well for those businesses. But if you've got drivers that take vehicles home, then you need to think about, well, how are they going to charge them? How do they access charging? How do we make sure that we can separately bill my business charging from my personal charging? And all of those kind of things are things that we can help customers with if they want to go on that EV journey. But it is a big step for business, and it is a change in how they operate. And we're encouraging businesses that, rather than think they can go from no electric vehicles to 100% electric vehicles, that you start and you begin the journey and start experimenting for how it would work with your business.
Yeah, and I suppose looking at that broader picture and looking ahead to both Britain and Ireland, is enough being done from an infrastructure point of view to facilitate a move, even if it is bit by bit over a period of time, you know, fleets from the diesel to electric?
So I think one of the biggest challenges in both places, both the challenges are kind of different in both of the markets, but one that's common is just public charging infrastructure. And also, the public charging infrastructure put in place for cars isn't necessarily fit for purpose for commercial vehicles. So you need a solution that works for commercial vehicles. So as a country's building out their charging network, they need to find something that functions for both. And another issue that's not, I don't think it's quite such an issue in Ireland, is kind of giving businesses access to the grid to have access to the right level of power to support the charging requirements of a fleet of electric vehicles. That's kind of a big need, along with a broader integrated strategy that all the different pieces fit together and allow you to move, make the move to electrification simply and easily.
Well, look, there has been a huge amount of work done in this space, and I'm sure that will continue, and we will bring you those updates when they do occur. But for the moment, Lisa Brankin, it's been an absolute pleasure talking to you. Thank you so much for joining me here on News Talk.
Thank you very much, Jess. It's been great to talk to you.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. Last week, I told you about American Manhunt, Osama bin Laden, which is on Netflix. And over the coming days, another excellent documentary is coming to the platform. It's called Titan, the Ocean Gate Disaster. You might remember this story from June 2023. It had the world obsessed with all eyes on the ocean. And of course, like every disaster these days, it has now been turned into a documentary for Netflix. Take a listen to the trailer.
There was no way of knowing when Titan was going to fail, but it was a mathematical certainty that it would fail. Stockton saw an opportunity to restart tourist visits to Titanic.
Stockton fully believed in what he was doing and that it would work.
He wanted fame. To fuel his ego, fame.
I have no desire to die. This kind of risk.
I thought Stockton was a borderline psychopath. How do you manage a person like that who owns the company?
This is one of the safest things I will ever do.
Nobody spoke up. It would ruin somebody's life.
Stockton said, Bonnie is going to be our next lead pilot. Are you nuts? I'm an accountant.
No one's dying under my watch. Period.
Yeah, that is the trailer for Titan, the Ocean Gate disaster, which is coming to Netflix on June 11th. It's quite morbid, I know, but again, this is another area of fascination of mine. I remember being glued to the news coverage. I've watched multiple YouTube documentaries, so I have to say I am looking forward to this one. that is coming on the 11th of June. But as ever, I would love to hear your recommendations. You can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. Elsewhere this week, we got the good news that Stripe is taking over from BT as the headline sponsor of the Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. This, for me, was one of the lovely, almost heartwarming stories of the week. You might know that both of the Collison brothers, who now lead Stripe, took part in the Young Scientist and Technology Exhibition. And Patrick Collison actually won the competition 20 years ago this year. They've always spoken so warmly about the event. And it is just, in my opinion, a gorgeous thing to see them now paying it forward and giving back to the community. I've said it quite a few times over the years that taking part in The Young Scientist was one of the best things that I did when I was in secondary school. I did it in third and fourth year, I want to say, or maybe it was second and third year. I actually think it was second and third year. And I learned so many amazing skills that weren't based on academic performance. Yes, we had scientific projects. I did it with a girl in my class called Jennifer. But the real takeaways that I got from it were about the soft skills. It was stuff like talking to people, explaining the project to the judges, meeting the deadlines. It was just, they're all skills that still stand to me to this day. And I am thrilled that an excellent, globally recognised Irish company has come on board to hopefully carry this exhibition through its next iteration. And sticking with science, on Thursday morning, I was glued to the Pat Kenny show when my dear pal, Professor Luke O'Neill, joined Pat Kenny in studio to talk through some ways in which AI is or could disrupt education. Now, it's not necessarily in ways you might think. Take a listen to this.
Every day I see this at my own job. You know, it's amazing. So one actually I didn't send you notes on is there's a thing called co-scientists now, right?
Co-scientists.
Now, Google are piloting this. A scientific friend of mine told me you have an AI on your phone. You have a scientific conversation with this bot.
Yeah.
You discuss experiments. You discuss controls. Read the literature. Have a big sort of chat. Show data to the co-scientists. And they tell you, are you right or wrong? You know. So in other words, it's like your personal assistant scientifically.
It's a collaboration between you and an AI bot.
Exactly. Yeah, that's going to happen more and more. But the first amazing example I came across, Pat, is you can do a course now on detective novel writing given by Agatha Christie. Isn't that amazing?
Agatha Christie.
Well, it's the BBC. Let's give the BBC credit. They've set this up. And it's the first time ever a dead person's been used in education.
So how are they? It's a deep fake, basically.
It's a deep fake. Yeah, they've fed into the machine, let's just call it that, all her writings and her novels, all her interviews, her photographs, and an actress. They had to use an actress now who looks like her. And they've modified the face of it to give the lecture course on how to write the most effective detective novel. So,
and her voice, for example.
Her voice. Yeah, they got They got recordings of the voice and they were able to get that into the deep fake.
So the woman delivers the lines, the actress, and then they use deep fakery to mimic Agatha Christie's own voice.
Exactly, yes. You're being taught how to write a detective novel by Agatha Christie. Now, of course, where that's going, Pat, and the next example we have is education, obviously, as well.
Sure.
And where they're heading now here is personalising the educational experience. So there'll be a chatbot giving the lesson to the student that's tailored for that student. Now, we've known for a long time, if the teacher is the same ethnicity as the student, for instance, the student learns more. So you can kind of, this has been known, you know, obviously enough, these things in education have been understood before. But one example they give, Pat, what about an eight-year-old child? You teach the eight-year-old child about snow and ice with Elsa from Frozen.
Wow.
So you create a character based on Elsa who was in Frozen to teach the child about that is one example.
Okay, what about relativity for physics students?
Now, well, I'm going to be out of a job soon enough, Pat, because you can imagine teaching immunology, you might get the world's most famous immunologist as a deep fake to teach it. Einstein to teach relativity, Darwin to teach evolution, Picasso to teach painting. This is what they're actually exploring now.
So who would teach immunology?
Ah, well, that's the question now. I'm irreplaceable.
Also, your bot couldn't sing and play the guitar.
That's true. You always spot the difference. But what they're saying, Pat, is this won't get rid of teachers, by the way. I mean, what's very interesting is the big fear is job losses. Of course, AI will destroy jobs. That's not happening at the moment, is the first thing to say. They're being used to enhance the activity of the worker, whatever the job the person does, you can use AI to enhance that job. So a teacher might well run 20 lessons with 20 different bots tailored to each student, and afterwards then talk to the students and discuss it. This is what they're talking about, you know, that's the possible future of this.
Yeah, that's Professor Luke O'Neill, Professor of Biochemistry at the School of Immunology in Trinity College Dublin, speaking to Pat Kenny on Thursday. I would love to know your thoughts on this. It's a bit of an uncomfortable one from my point of view, like bringing voices back from the dead. Is this pure novelty, or is there an academic argument for it? Do you think you would be better at English if you were taught by Agatha Christie? I don't know. To be honest, I don't really love those synthetic voices. I think you can always tell, well, not always, but in a lot of cases, you can tell pretty instantly when a voice has been manipulated. And so I don't know that I would love it if I was a student, regardless of who the voice once belonged to, if you get me. There's another example that equally freaks me out. Have a listen.
Ladies and gentlemen, please welcome my first guest on Virtually Parkinson, Jason Derulo. How did your family respond to your dreams? Did they nurture that creative spirit in you?
Great question. You know, without those same sacrifices that he made, you know, I wouldn't be here today. Wow, that took a left turn. I fractured my C2 vertebrae. I had to make a way out. There's also a part of me that doesn't want my son to feel the way that I felt.
I'm curious about how you've found this interview process.
The way that you were able to ask the questions felt like you knew me.
Yeah, that is an AI version of Michael Parkinson interviewing pop star Jason Derulo. There's a weird sentence for you. So Michael Parkinson, the beloved BBC presenter who passed away a number of years ago, his voice has now been brought back to life. And that was a snippet from the podcast called Virtually Parkinson, which is co-produced by Parkinson's son, Mike, alongside a company called Deep Fusion Films. So we spoke about it on the show, actually, the week that Michael Parkinson passed away. Cullen Buick joined me and we paid tribute to Michael Parkinson's interview style and his meandering questions, his little chuckles, the things that made him a human. And to see and to hear now that his voice has been brought back via AI is a weird one. Obviously, it's lovely to hear his voice, but it's not the same. I listened through, I think it was 40 minutes of that interview, and it's just not the same. One of the things that always stood out to me about Parkinson and his interview style was his listening capability. And he'd always leave little pauses, or he'd throw glances to the camera or look around or make a joke or shift awkwardly in his chair. I just don't necessarily get the appeal of a podcast of this nature. Technologically speaking, yes, it's cool, it's impressive and fair play. But as we spoke about on the show a little while ago with Glenn Mulcahy of MojoCon, there are awkward conversations going to have to be had with people. Particularly broadcasters or celebrities or well-known people, because it seems now that when you die, your voice doesn't die with you. And I wonder, are we going to get to the stage now where we need to factor stuff like this into our wills, or, you know, leave a digital intentions plan, which is freaky and it's not pleasant. But I do think it is something that potentially will come down the line. But let me know what you think. Am I just being, you know, overly freaked out by a cool technological innovation? I think maybe I'm a bit more sensitive to it because of the industry that I'm in. I don't love voice cloning technology. I absolutely see the potential benefits of it. Right now, I am talking to you with a bit of a head cold. I've been feeling a bit run down. Do I sound my best on this show? Absolutely not. Would it be nice if I could have an AI version of the best version of my voice playing out instead? 100%. Do I want to sign a piece of paper that says it's okay for that to happen? No. I think we're kind of getting into that blurred lines space and phase now where you give them an inch and they'll take a mile. And I think we need to be very protective over our digital identities and how, where, when and why AI versions of us can be used. It also then ties into the wider conversations around our digital legacies in terms of our information that's stored in the cloud or on our devices. I know that the social media companies, Facebook or Meta in particular, have policies in place whereby you can appoint a legacy contact. So when you pass away, the appointed person has the option to put your social media platforms either private, in memoriam, or delete them entirely. But that's a decision, or that's a move that can only be made while you're still alive. And it's not a fun thing to contemplate. It's not a nice conversation to have with someone. But I do think these are conversations that need to happen. Like, what happens to your phone and your photographs and all the stuff that's stored in your cloud when you pass away? I know Sinead Ryan, a presenter of The Home Show, has written about this for the Irish Independent, about creating a digital will or a will for your digital life. I looked into it in the past, and I know that, for example, say if you've bought thousands of songs on iTunes or you've bought loads of movies on one of the online services, they can't get passed on. Now, I'm sure that's not the biggest fish that will be fried on the day that this is all being addressed, but a lot of things can't be passed on. Apple, I know, allows you to appoint a person, a sort of a legacy contact, so that if something happens to you, they can get access to your account, recover your photographs, any other information that is stored in your phone that you would want accessed or your family would want accessed. But again, these are steps that you need to take while you're around. So it's, again, not overly pleasant for a June bank holiday weekend. But I just think these conversations, they do need to happen sooner rather than later. Let me know, have you drafted a digital version of your will? Do you have legacy contacts appointed on your social platforms? You can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. And speaking of that email address, when we come back here on News Talk, we're going to jump in to the inbox.
Tech Talk with Jess Kelly.
Welcome back to the final part of this week's Tech Talk. This is Jess Kelly with you here on News Talk. As ever, if you have any questions for me, you can email me techtalk@newstalk.com. I'm very aware that the inbox has been unloved in recent weeks. Between the Ireland Gateway to Europe trip and then I took some leave, I haven't been as prompt on the email as I normally am. So I do apologise if you're waiting on a reply. I'm doing my best to get through as many as I can. And with that in mind, let's delve in and answer some of the questions. So first up, we have Susan, who says, we are in the process of redecorating our home office and we've decided to put a standing desk instead of the old IKEA unit that has served us well over the last decade. I remember you posting about one on Instagram, but can't recall the details. Any advice would be great. Yes, Susan. So when we moved into our home, one of the key considerations for us was having a decent home office set up. During the pandemic, we worked from the ironing board. We worked from a coffee table. We worked from, like, towards the end of our time in the apartment, we were working from like packing boxes and all the rest. So one of the key things that we agreed upon when we were moving in was getting a good standing desk. The reason I was interested in the standing desk is because Carl Henry is always talking about the benefits of any form of movement, but also standing. So there are benefits to having a standing desk. It also just gives you the opportunity to shift your position during the workday. Like, I could spend hours and hours sitting at the desk without moving, which is not good. So a standing desk, I think, is a great option. The one that we have is the Codex Bamboo Leap Desk. I had to look up the name, but that's what it is. It's the Codex Bamboo Leap Desk, and it's a sit-stand desk. So obviously you can have it down at normal height and sit down. But we love it because it's wide enough to fit all of our devices. So we have a Mac Mini plugged into a ridiculously large monitor. And then on the days when I'm working from home, it's big enough that I can plug my laptop in as well into the same setup. My boyfriend has it set up really neatly. So I just have to plug one cable into my laptop and suddenly the mouse, the keyboard and the monitor are all hooked up. So it's very, very neat. Also, there's a very neat remote control that sits under the lip of the desk that lets you raise or lower the height depending on what you need it to do. It doesn't do it in a wild, dramatic fashion. It's very subtle and slow, which I like from a safety point of view, because again, it's rare you'd see me without a cup of coffee. So having a slow, easy to control, easy to manage hiring and lowering process just means I'm not going to get coffee on the floor. What I would say though, as much as I love it, and I genuinely do love it, I'd recommend you take your time with the builds. I think, and I remember putting it together, I was like a car mechanic lying down on my back in the office trying to put it together. But I think I put the legs the wrong way round initially. Now, thankfully, I caught myself before I was too far down the road. But just fully read the instructions, lay all the bits out, learn from my mistakes. Just follow the instructions and you'll be fine. But as I said, I would highly recommend it. So again, it's the Codex Bamboo Leap Desk. We also got a chair from that same place. I can't remember the name of the chair, but it's an ergonomic one, and it's great because as I get older now, I get sciatica in the bottom of my back, and it's awful. So sitting in a really good chair absolutely makes a difference, particularly on those days where the standing thing just doesn't appeal as much. But yeah, I hope that helps. Next up, we have an email here with no name on it. It says, are the Meta Ray-Ban glasses worth the money? I keep seeing ads for them on Instagram and I'm tempted, but I don't know if it's worth the cash. Okay, I'm torn on this one. I have the original versions. So the Ray-Ban glasses, the first collaboration that Ray-Ban and Meta did, I've used them a little bit over the years. I wore them consistently when I was at CES, the Consumer Electronics Show, in January of this year. But to be honest, I wasn't blown away by the quality. I had this notion that I'd get loads of hand-free content. I could, you know, pick up devices, play with them. I could do that point of view style stuff on my Instagram. I had great intentions, but I'll be honest, I wasn't blown away by the quality of the content. And also some of the content I captured looked rubbish because I'm an idiot. So either I moved my head too much or I wasn't looking in the right direction at the right time. And that sounds silly, right? But the two lenses on the glasses are at the outer part of glasses, whereas my eyeballs are naturally enough not there, like they're on the inside. So even if I'm looking at something directly, it wasn't being picked up as I would want it to be by the glasses. Now, maybe that's just because I'm a fool. If you were willing to spend a bit more time perhaps than I was to get familiar with how they work and how to get the most out of them, perhaps. There's definitely a novelty factor. There's definitely a wow factor in terms of the technology and the way it syncs across pretty much instantly from your phone and you can share them on your socials. But I'll be completely honest, the pair that I have, they're a review model. They live here in the office. Anyone can use them in this office. Would I go out and buy them with my own money? No, I think is the honest answer. But again, maybe somebody disagrees with me. Do you have them? Do you love them? Am I wrong? Am I an idiot? Maybe not answer that last one. But again, you can drop me an email to techtalk@newstalk.com. I would love to hear your thoughts. Finally, for this week, we have an email here from John that says, may I ask what model Samsung you recommended on the PK show on Tuesday, 22nd of April, please? I think it was a mid-low priced one. Let me just scan through and see what email did I send Pat Kenny on the 22nd of April. Please hold. Okay, I have it. So that was the Samsung A56 5G. And I remember this phone because I was blown away by it. So this is one of the mid-range phones. By that, it's in and around the 500 quid mark. So it's not super expensive, but it feels and functions like a higher end phone. The previous versions have been very impressive. That A range, I think it's always worth looking at. I think it's difficult to buy a bad phone from from that family. But the A56 has the Samsung AI built in. So you might have heard me recently talking to Quentin Doran O'Reilly from Samsung about the new S25 Edge, which is one of the more premium devices. But essentially, this A56 has similar AI technologies built in. So you are getting that premium offering there. Also, in terms of the functionality, it has a very impressive camera setup. So on the back, you're getting three lenses. So there's the 12 megapixel, which I think is ultra wide. There's a 50 megapixel wide and then a 5 megapixel macro lens. So the combination of those three lenses means that your images just look great. And again, you've got the AI built into the phone that can optimize and enhance the images that you're capturing. When I was testing it out, I used it for, like, I want to say I maybe used it for 9 days or so. I genuinely couldn't believe it was as powerful as it was and that the images were as crisp and clear as it was. Also, the battery life on this phone is great. So absolutely, if you are on the hunt for that mid-range, definitely take a look at that. John Riley was on the show a few weeks back, maybe 2 months ago now. It's worth scrolling back in the podcast feed and finding some of the recommendations he had for other brands as well. So I think Honor and Oppo and Xiaomi, there's quite a few players that offer phones in and around a similar price bracket. But again, you can't really go wrong with Samsung. And as I said, that A56 5G is very impressive. Right. That's it for this week, I think. If you missed anything, you can listen back on the app or please take a moment to subscribe to the podcast feed wherever you get your podcasts and you'll get all of the episodes there and you can listen back to recommendations as and when you wish. I mentioned John Riley there. He's going to be on the show next week talking about the brand new Nintendo Switch 2. So many people are so excited. I still haven't decided if I'm going to buy one yet. We haven't pre-ordered one. So I'm kind of hoping that if John tells me to, I can go out and buy one next weekend. Again, maybe I'm a fool. But John will have his paws on one next week and will give us his first impressions. So do tune in for that. I'm going to be back with Pat Kenny on Tuesday morning. But I'm going to leave you with one of the songs from my running playlist, because as I said at the very top of the show, on Sunday, myself and 20,000 other women are going to take to the streets of Dublin to run the VHI Women's Mini Marathon. I'm running in aid of the Dublin Rape Crisis Centre. If you have a few cent, a few euro to spare, please consider donating. You can go to idonate.ie/runfordrcc. And as I said, this is one of the many songs that will hopefully get me through the 10 kilometres. If you're taking part, best of luck. I hopefully see you there. But for the rest of you, enjoy your long weekend and I will chat to you next week. Good luck. Happiness hit her like a train on a track. Coming towards her. Thank you. Run fast.